From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Critically analyzing global affairs, this is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, what day is it? Thank goodness it's Friday, the end of the week. And I'm pooped. What can I tell you? The greater reset. The Mexican Davos here is underway. I think we got two more days left. Meanwhile, the real Davos has concluded, I believe, out there in Europe. So far so good. Some quick news for you, since I'm here in Mexico. It's being reported that Mexico's most famous UFO experts believes a photo of a sunset over a stadium near the U.S.-Mexico border shows a flying saucer. And separately, in Turkey, it's being reported that there is a bizarre UFO-like cloud spotted over Turkey. I feel like I'm watching Will Smith's Independence Day. What's going on? Is it already that time for the staged fake alien invasion? They're really speeding things up from dystopian Total Recall technocracy in 2020, 2021 to World War III in 2022 to UFOs, fake UFO alien contact 2023. So really, I don't know what's going to happen in 2024. What else do we have? I think we've run out of sequels here. So anyways, that's going on with the UFO sightings, and it's getting real in Moscow. Missile systems designed to intercept aircraft and incoming missiles appear to have been deployed on top of several defense and administrative buildings in downtown Moscow, signaling that the Kremlin is preparing for a potential, if unlikely, attack being directed on the Russian capital. Hashtag, let's get this party started. That's pretty crazy when we're at this point. I wonder if we're going to see Washington start installing missile defense at the Capitol building. But it seems to be we're getting always ever more closer to the pushing of that big shiny red button. I'm voting for John Bolton 2024. Let's do it. Afro Man or John Bolton. This is interesting. U.S. is pulling military gear from Korea for Ukraine. The Pentagon is scrambling to keep Kiev's forces fighting. The U.S. has asked its forces stationed in South Korea to provide military equipment for Ukraine. While the Pentagon did not state what kind of equipment would be requisitioned, reports suggest that U.S. is sourcing artillery shells. Are they running out of tanks, ammo? Interesting. And there's just so many people dropping like flies. Foreign minister of Gabon dies after heart attack at cabinet meeting, was rushed to military hospital. Every single day, so many people dying suddenly of cardiac events. So what more can we say? And Pfizer is in the news. India is saying that Pfizer had tried to bully India. New Delhi never approved Pfizer's Pentagon juice, as apparently Pfizer had wanted protection from lawsuits over adverse effects. But guys, this is all, what do they say, safe and effective? Why do you need protection from adverse effects if it's safe and effective? Again, U.S. drug maker Pfizer attempted to bully the Indian government into granting it indemnity from legal action, and the Pentagon juice was never approved in India. Again, if there's any normie listening to TNT right now, why would Pfizer need protection from lawsuits for something that's safe, 200% safe and effective? So, and Japan is trying to go back to the old normal. Japan wants to downgrade COVID-1984 as seasonal flu and review pandemic measures. So that's one kind of good sign. I guess I would still Well, yeah, that's we'll take that small victory there. And Scottish more madness in Scotland. Scottish children are being surveyed on gender. Kids as young as 7 will reportedly be asked if they identify as transgender or non-binary. Are you kidding me? Pull your kids out of schools and homeschool. And if it's illegal in Scotland, then move to another country and homeschool. What can I tell you? This is crazy. I don't want anyone asking my kid what gender they are. They are only one biological gender. It's science. Trust the science. Anyways, I saw a poster I posted in my Telegram. I think it was in Spain. And the poster said something like, where is it? It said, gay, okay, bisexual, genius. Heterosexuality is not normal, it says. Now they're saying heterosexuality is abnormal. And, you know, it's abnormal. And so now we've got a new thing. Heterophobia is what I call it. All right. Reminder that you can listen live through tntradio.live. Just click that listen live button, or you can download the TNT Radio app for your surveillance device, which otherwise is known as your smartphone, or you can stream us live on YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. We've got all the bases covered on TNT Radio.
Count on us to deliver the facts.
I can rely on them.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Love them or hate them, you must admit those wacky World Economic Forum speakers say the darndest things. Case in point, a Duke University professor and futurist just said that genetic predictions could play a role in whether people decide to have children in the future. She also said humans' minds could be hacked. Here with the story, joining me now is, guess who? TNT Radio News producer Adam Clark, a.k.a. Ruckus.
Thanks, Rory. Of course, we all hope it's really me and not just some sort of ChatGPT Vol-E version of me. But no, I assure you, it's me. They went out with a bang this year over at Davos, didn't they? I've been seeing all the news today how they like, look, they just said it's a new world order. They said it. They said the words. Yeah, they've been saying words like that forever. However, some things that this particular presenter was saying really kind of freaked me out. I'm not familiar with this one. Nita, I'm going to mess up her name. Is it Farahany? Farahany? Something like that. I don't know. But yeah, Nita Farahany. She's a professor at Duke University. And she's done a couple speaking engagements thus far. Her most recent one here was during a panel entitled Transforming Medicine and Redefining Life. That's a mouthful right there. So let's see what she had to say. She says, quote, "A lot of people and a lot of different organizations that I work with struggle with questions of genetic predictions, particularly for highly penetrant, meaning it's very, very predictive that you will likely develop the disease, like ALS, for example, but you don't know when." Okay, she goes on. "So you have incredibly high prediction, but very little sense about when the onset of the disease would be. How do you counsel somebody about how to integrate that information into their lives, whether or not they should do genetic testing?" she asked. "What the implications for their family members may be as well, because if they have that particularly gene, that particular mutation, it may very, very well be that children have it, or it may very well implicate whether or not they decide to have children to pass that along to their children." She also discussed if employers and insurance companies should have access to people's health and these quote unquote genetic predictions. "This reminds me of a movie I saw called Gattaca. Did you see that one, Hervory?"
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is. So I'm like, wow, okay. All right, that's neat. I'll deal with that when I can. But as I was proceeding down the article, I'm like, well, how did I miss this? I guess just yesterday, on Thursday, she was doing a talk called Ready for Brain Transparency. Okay, so what's this about? Well, she was hailing the quote-unquote extraordinary promise of the use of mind-reading devices in the workplace, while admitting, of course, thank goodness, that they could be, quote, the most oppressive technology ever used at large scale across society. Is that a threat or a promise? That's what I want to know coming from these people. So she asserted that wearable mind-reading devices are not a figment of the future. They're already here. She calls them, quote-unquote, Fitbits for the brain. She says, quote, they're already using consumable wearing devices. These are headbands, hats that have sensors that can pick up your brainwave activity, earbuds, headphones, tiny tattoos that you can wear behind your ear. We can pick up emotional states like happiness or sadness or anger. She says, we can pick up and decode faces that you're seeing in your mind, simple shapes, numbers, your PIN number, she explained, adding that such technology could therefore give access to your bank account. I'm just going to have to stop right here because I'm ready to run out the door and go like hide, dude. Did you hear this one? This one's the craziest one yet.
Yeah, I'm ready to run to the jungles of Chiapas or some of the deserts up in northern Mexico. I mean, this stuff is crazy. Yeah, you mentioned Gattaca. They're trying to play God, really. This is not going to end well at all. Someone broached this subject one of these past days here at the Greater Reset, talking about this messing with our DNA and genes, and I think it'll end up like Island of Dr. Moreau, if I recall. There's like a sort of like a Frankenstein situation. I think that's where all of this is going to end, when you're doing mRNA therapy and then neural links to your brain and this and that. There's no way this is going to end well, meddling with the forces of nature, and we don't need it. Like, nobody wants this. I definitely don't want it. Probably most of the people I know, nobody wants this. I want to live a natural, organic, human, analog life. And a lot of people do, and a lot of people here at the Greater Reset in Mexico as well. Just going to head out into our organic farms. We don't need any of this stuff. And it's all about what my guest yesterday, Hannah Maria, was talking about, this neo-pharmacy, this, what do you call it? Biocracy, this biosecurity state that wants to take over, expand into our bodies and ultimately our soul. So, yeah, not good, Ruckus.
Well, to your point about people not wanting the WEF in charge or controlling the world, that's exactly what Elon Musk asked in his poll today or yesterday. And they got like something like 2.15 million people or something like that. And 86% of them were like, heck no. When asked, the World Economic Forum should control the world, they're like, nah. Yeah, of course. So we are seriously broaching into the science fiction film area now. I mean, we were talking about Gattaca there a second ago, but this mind reading thing. I'm trying to find it, but here it is. When they did this Ready for the Brain Transparency session, they opened it with a short video, and it displayed a dystopian scenario where employees' brainwaves were not only decoded to determine their performance in the workplace, but also to determine whether they participated in illegal activity. So that's thought crime, and that's from another movie, Minority Report. And you were talking about the aliens coming. So there's Independence Day. When do the zombies fit in? Or is that the fentanyl? I don't know. I'll wait.
Speaking of zombies, yeah, there's a great Mexican podcast group making a documentary of the Great Reset. They're called We Are Not Zombies. I think they're going to interview me tomorrow. And it's funny, the article, just to mention, my guest Johnny Hoddle here just tweeted out an image of both of us now. And it's so funny because Tim Hinchcliffe responded on Twitter And we're looking at his article that you're using from Sociable, Tim, and I was about to mention his name before Johnny tweeted and Tim commented. There's just so much synergy here. It's insane. I should get Tim back. I was thinking to get Tim back on to talk more about this stuff. He was recently with Russell Brand. So anyways, Ruckus, I guess I better start saving up for this Fitbit for the brain. Maybe it'll be easier to do, you know, TNT radio with this. No?
Well, that's what the Neuralink is for, my friend. So we just got to wait till Elon gets that rushed out to the masses. Sign me up. No, not. Yeah. Shout out to Tim Hinchcliffe and shout out to your next guest. You guys are doing some great stuff. So keep it up.
All right. I'll check back with you soon, Mr. Ruckus. And we'll take calls. We'll be right back on the other side of this break.
TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
When he was speaking at the National Action Network dinner or lunch on Monday, Martin Luther King's birthday, Joe Biden kind of went off the rails a little bit. And he also attacked the police.
We have to retrain cops as to why should you always shoot with deadly force? The fact is, if you need to use your weapon, you don't have to do that. And look, to call a fresh approach to recruit and how we recruit, how we hire, how we train, how we promote, and how we retain in law enforcement, to come from the neighborhoods that they serve and know the people they're charged to protect.
What are they supposed to do? It's not just him. First of all, the left would have them have no guns. He would have them, they would have you send social workers to talk the criminals down. But in the real world, you can't aim for, you know, oh, he's got a gun in his left hand, let's shoot the gun out of his hand. Or this is split second, you know, life or death situations. You shoot where there's the biggest target.
The Steve Malzberg Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is a message for the parents of young children in the United States. I am Dr. Tess Lorry from the World Council for Health. Please consider the danger of vaccinating your children and babies with the COVID-19 injections. They are not the same as traditional vaccines and are causing significant harm to children around the world. Your children have their whole lives ahead of them. They are not endangered by COVID at all. Please hear us when we say, for your children, it is much safer to wait. Thank you.
TNT Radio wants to hear from you. Call Hivori Morich now. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, it's hour one, and joining me is Johnny Hoddle, not his real name, of course. He's a freedom maximalist, host of the Staying Free podcast, where he conducts fireside chats with friends and allies of the growing counterculture of sovereign individuals. Find all his links at linktree.com/Johnny Hoddle. That's linktr.ee/JONNY Hoddle, like what you do, what you're supposed to do, I guess, with Bitcoin. His Twitter is also at Johnny Hoddle, and his podcast Twitter is at Staying Free Pods. Welcome back to TNT. Long time no speak, Johnny.
Yeah, thanks for having me back again, Hivori. It's good to be here again with you, doing another episode and talking about the Great Reset.
The greatest reset. And by the way, we've got our chat. Would you look at that? I don't know if it's just me or the chat just looks, it's got a funky new look. I don't know if it's a new chat thing, but a thingamajig. But at the bottom right of TNTRadio.live, we got a chat box. You can throw in some questions for myself, for Johnny. And again, the phone lines are open at the top of TNTRadio.live. You'll find the numbers. You can give us a call, ask about Mexico or whatever you like. So it's, what day is it of greater reset? No, it's the third day, right?
Day three, yeah.
And today was, and this was a good point. You know, we were having dinner with one of the speakers last night, James Guzman. And it's funny, he made a point at dinner saying that, well, an important point is we need to make money, like to do the things that we're doing, buying, like Derek Rose wants to, he's got his Conscious Agora. He needs $200,000 to purchase that plot of land and build what he wants to build there. And it's funny because then this morning, the third speaker, Mark Moss, who's got a very popular podcast, I catch it from time to time, he was saying the same thing that James was saying, that, you know, we have to be capitalists. We have to have businesses think of ways to make money. And that was the theme today. You know, Catherine Austin Fitz talked about that, and a few other speakers. So just, you know, that's sort of the thing that's most on my mind. So, you know, what do you think about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, obviously today the kind of theme of the day was agorism and parallel networks. And I guess that's going to mean a different thing to different people. You know, some people are going to say, okay, well, we need to, you know, move away completely from using money at all. And we need to, you know, have kind of barter economies. And for other people, that might mean using cash and moving away from, you know, digital currencies. For some people, it might mean using gold. For some people, it might mean using Bitcoin or some other crypto. And I think it's going to mean a different thing to each individual. But I think that the main point to get across here is that, you know, there's nothing wrong with the profit incentive. In fact, with the idea of voluntarism and, you know, some of these kind of themes that have been talked about here at the event, profit is not something that is, you know, outside of the realms of these ideas we're talking about. In fact, you know, for instance, with voluntarism, it's all about consensual trade. So I think that we're not shy of talking about money, you know, talking about the profit incentive. The important thing is that you're offering goods and services genuinely to other people that they want to purchase from you. And I think that's how we end up building a proper society based on consent. Now, this is quite different from what we've been seeing in the world. You know, you look at, for instance, things like the vaccine campaign and, you know, Pfizer and Moderna and these companies, how do they get their products out there? Well, they basically go to the governments and they bribe the governments and force the governments to take away people's freedoms in order to give them these products. So that's essentially the kind of polar opposite of what we're trying to advocate for. What we're trying to advocate for is saying, you know, there's nothing wrong with money. There's nothing wrong with profit. You know, we're not trying here to, you know, tear apart capitalism or the profit incentive. In fact, what we want to do is use that in a more honest way and kind of incorporate people's, you know, natural propensity to want goods and services and to do it on a consensual basis. So I think that everyone is aligned on that, and people look at it from different angles. Like I said, you know, people have different ideas of how they want the monetary system to look. But the important thing is that everything is based upon individual consent and consensual transactions.
And you mentioned, you know, the first speaker was Catherine Austin Fitz. I think a lot of us have seen many of her videos. I was more impacted by Tom Woods, for example, because he sort of, you know, a lot of the speakers were very energetic, and Tom Woods was gave a lot of examples of how to make money online, you know, through building an email list. And I think a lot of a lot of these people are successful, and they've got even John Bush, the host in Texas, he's running I don't know how many businesses simultaneously. And I think what they do is they try to automate many aspects of that. And so, like what Tom Woods was talking about, what he does online, there are many things are automated. And so I think it is something tough to build, but I think this is one way we all need to move toward. I wasn't too impacted by Catherine Austin Fitz's thing, because I think she gave a more macro view about what things to do. And I think Tom Woods dug a little deeper, giving more specific examples. But, you know, what did you like about Catherine's talk or you know, any of the other speakers?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't catch Catherine's full talk. I was a little late arriving because it was the first one of the day, and we'd just kind of been finishing up on a yoga session in the morning. But I really liked what I did see of her talk. I thought that, you know, essentially what she was saying, which I completely agree with, is that, you know, it's very, very difficult to stop a revolution once it started going. And she was quite clear that she thought that revolution was happening here, and that she thought that it was inevitable that it would win. And I agree with that. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to come without any kind of consequence and without any hardship. I absolutely think that all of that's going to come down the line. But I do think that ultimately it is impossible to extinguish the natural human desire for freedom. And, you know, that's something she said towards the end of her talk, was that, you know, humans have a natural propensity to want freedom, to want to be free, and to want to, you know, live out a fulfilled and prosperous life. And essentially what they are trying to do, and this is why they need to create, essentially, you know, these people who right now in Davos are talking about ways to, you know, enslave us. They need to create this digital prison, because it's the only way that they can have their world, is that they have to do it by force. They have to do it by putting you in a, you know, a digital and possibly physical prison, in order to kind of quash that natural propensity for freedom. So, you know, for me, I didn't hear too much about the macro stuff that she was talking about, because I only caught the end of the discussion, but certainly towards the end, you know, she definitely had a very positive view of where this was going. And she thought that this was a revolution, the beginnings of a revolution that is going to continue to gain momentum. And I absolutely agree with that.
And something interesting that John Bush said, one of the co-hosts of Greater Reset, that what they're trying to do with this fourth industrial revolution, the fourth Reich, the final revolution, is stop the ability for revolution. I think that was a good point. Because once they set up the prison planet, there will not be a way to make a revolution again. And we've seen that in a lot of those sci-fi dystopian films, whether it's like Maze Runner or Hunger Games, right? I mean, they win in the end, but basically, you know, that's locked in digital grid system that they're in, it's just infinitely more harder to launch a revolution. We're going to jump to our news break. We'll be right back.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check in today's headlines. A Russian spy ship has been patrolling off the coast of Hawaii, but so far has remained in international waters. Thousands of protesters demanding the ouster of President Dina Boluarte poured into Peru's capital, clashing with police who fired tear gas. The chairman of the German manufacturing giant Siemens told a panel at the World Economic Forum that 1 billion people should stop eating meat and replace it with synthetic proteins in order to save the climate.
On air and on the app.
I listen on the app.
Stay up to date around the clock.
I listen, therefore I know.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we are back with Johnny Hoddle, an Englishman in Mexico. He's got the Staying Free podcast. Find it on the podcast ecosystem or through his linktr.ee/Johnny Hoddle. And we're taking calls. If you'd like to call in, feel free. Numbers are at the top of tntradio.live. As my past guest, Terry Wolf, said, don't be lazy. Or you can shoot us a question in the live interactive chat at the bottom right-hand side of tntradio.live. And Matt Guba, someone you've interviewed, successful British businessman, he gave a talk. And honestly, when I was listening to him, I felt like I was listening to myself, because I think this what he was getting across was exactly what I've been talking about. Him and a few other guests, and Mark Moss after him, they were saying, look, we need to talk about this stuff, this sort of black pill stuff first. We have to understand the battlefield, right? And some people say, I think it's something we have to keep revisiting from time to time, because the battlefield keeps changing. You know, new CBDCs come in, and then different iterations. They're throwing different weapons at us. And so he was making that point, Matt Guba, like, this is what's going on. His solution was, he created some liberty organization where he's now building activists in different parts of UK and Australia as well. So if you're in Australia and you want to get involved, you can just look up Matt Guba, G-U-B-B-A, and find his Liberty organization in Australia. And my view, though, for all of this is, it's like a decentralized guerrilla warfare system, like tribes in Afghanistan, where I don't think any one organization is not going to solve this problem, whether it's Matt Guba or Greater Reset, Derek Bros, or whatever. But I think if they all link up, it's like death by a thousand cuts, right? And so, you know, your further thoughts on this or other stuff you've been seeing.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to what Matt Gubber's doing with the International Liberty Forum, it's almost, I'm just dropping my phone there. it's almost a very different, in a sense, from what Derek's doing. But at the same time, there are these kind of core principles which unite kind of, you know, both movements or both approaches, you know, which is individual choice, individual liberty, trying to promote self-sovereignty, et cetera, and trying to ensure that people don't fall into this kind of digital gulag. Now, I think with what Matt Gubber's doing, it's, I guess, a bit more of an approach to try to reach the everyman. You know, his approach is he wants to do kind of billboards, he wants to do kind of street activism, he wants to get people out talking to people who are not in our echo chamber and to try to kind of get them to understand the seriousness of this stuff so that they don't suddenly find that, oh, look, there's now a CBDC. I'm just going to go and walk straight into that trap. You know, he wants to try to build awareness from a kind of, you know, quote unquote normie level, I guess, you know, not to use that as too much of a pejorative there, but, you know, he's trying to reach people who, you know, they're just kind of getting on with their day. They're not really, you know, kind of consuming the same content that we are. Now, what Derek's doing, you know, I think that Derek is, you know, as you know, Hervoy as well, from the event itself, the people who are here, they're very, very in tune. You know, everyone seems to be doing something. You know, I've not talked to anyone yet who, you know, isn't doing some kind of, maybe they're doing some kind of activism, they're doing art, they're doing podcasting, they're making videos, you know, maybe they're buying land or trying to set up communities, whatever it is, they seem to be doing stuff. You know, I think that the event here, at least the people who are attending, they're very, very engaged with it. So in a sense, you know, it's giving people ideas, but it's trying to make people into leaders, I think. You know, what this event is trying to do is trying to get people on board with taking real action and, you know, starting communities, you know, trying to actually do things, getting people to be the change essentially that other people want to follow. And I think that, you know, Matt's approach is a bit different to that. You know, it's trying to go directly to the everyman and try to get them to understand these concepts. So I think that there's a place for both of them. And what I really like, and Derek, you know, reiterated this when he kind of gave his little talk after Matt, you know, he said, look, what they're trying to do is essentially a movement which is opposing what is going on with the World Economic Forum, the world they're trying to bring about. And what Derek's trying to do is similar to that, right? You know, it's trying to build an alternative movement. But there's a place for both. You know, both are trying different approaches, but ultimately there is an alignment on some crucial and important kind of key areas between both things. So yeah, you know, I think that I really hope that what Matt's doing kind of gains momentum as well, and certainly what Derek and John are building over here, that is also gaining momentum at the same time. And I'm sure there will be more to come, you know, because we are at the beginning of this. I think, you know, we're only at the beginning of this war, and I think it's going to go on probably at least for the next decade, you know. So I hope that there will be more movements that will kind of emerge and that can all kind of cooperate and take different approaches to reach different people. Because, you know, as much as, you know, this event is really great, and obviously yourself and me, you know, we're really kind of like in tune with what's going on here and really aligned to it, it's not going to be the approach to everyone. You know, not everyone is going to be on board with hearing about, you know, agorist communities and kind of building, you know, buying land and, you know, living off the land, etc. Not everyone's into that. You know, some people, they just want to understand, you know, which traps not to fall into. They want to get on with their life, they want to do their day-to-day, and they just want to know, okay, I should avoid the CBDCs, okay, you know, I should avoid the QR codes, the facial recognition, whatever it is. So I think Matt's approach is different, but it's great to have, you know, multiple approaches going on around the world, and, you know, we'll see where this stuff goes.
I'm still surprised by how many people who understand what's going on. And sometimes I don't like to say freedom community. I don't know, because maybe I'm not so comfortable putting myself in with this entire group, but, you know, people who understand what's going on, and they still like do the QR code stuff. Like, you know, we're out with some people and you get the QR code menus and it's like, and they don't have problem using it, but it's like, guys, come on, this is you're pushing us now further toward the, you know, digital technocracy. Tell the restaurants I want a physical menu. And I did that last night, and they give me a physical digital menu, the tablet that's basically on their website. Like, it's got a tablet, which it's their website and the menu on their website. So there's no more even paper physical menus, which is pretty crazy. But also what you just mentioned, it's funny. I met an elderly couple local Mexican elderly couple here, as I mentioned before, and they have some NGO that deals with promoting good ideals, like character, honesty, and try to develop that within the Mexican people. And it comes from the U.S. It's a U.S. organization. And the old man was telling me, just because we were talking, he felt that I was kind of like this person, and you know, that's visionary in a sense. And that's what David James Rodriguez, who was a guest of mine here on TNT 2 days ago, you can check out my interview with him in the archives, and he just spoke today. And that's something he said in his speech, David Rodriguez, that we are, all of us attending here are visionaries because we've broken away from the herd. We're no more followers, and we understand what's going on, and we're taking these painful steps now, these time-consuming steps to start taking action. And I would agree, this is visionary stuff, because you're now, like Indiana Jones, was it in the temple? Was it the, I think the third one, right? What's that third? Now they're making like a fifth or sixth Indiana Jones coming out this year, but...
I'm not a big Indiana Jones.
Oh, come on. Indiana Jones was awesome. I can't remember. Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, and it's escaping me. But anyways, he steps on this invisible bridge. It's like putting that one step forward. And yeah, this is visionary stuff. But someone else who I thought was fantastic, I think Paul Wheaton is his name, and he deals with permaculture.
The Ultimate Crusade.
The Last Crusade. There we go. Crusade. The Last Crusade. Okay. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
It's because I brought it up and it's giving me in Spanish. La Ultima Cruzada.
That's funny. But Paul Wheaton, right? He's focusing on permaculture. And it's crazy, though. This is a great resource. I mean, people can go to Great Greater Reset and just find the names and the resources, and even the sponsors are useful. But Paul Wheaton, I forget, he's in Montana, I think. And basically, he's got like different options. They teach you how to grow your food, but you can pay, I guess, $25,000 to him. And then he lets you use 1 acre of his land for life to live on and cultivate. And then they teach you how to do all this stuff there. Or he's got like an apprenticeship program where for 2 years you go on his land there. I guess it's vast. And you learn how to grow food. Grow food, take care of animals, all this stuff. And then if you finish 2 years of the apprenticeship, he'll give you 1 acre. He'll let you live on 1 acre for free for the rest of your life to grow, you know, whatever. I mean, there's just so many things people can be doing now. I was the people from Weston Price, great foundation that talks about, maybe you won't like it. I think they talk about meat, but... I was talking to some of the representatives here, and they just happened to live an hour away from me in Mexico. There's just so much stuff going on, but it takes a lot of work to map out, you know, the alternative space and pull things together that work for you, right? So, you know, do you have any thoughts on growing food, you know, looking for land and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, I think that all of those things are important, and I like the experiments that are going on, you know, with Derek and, you know, the people who are doing I think it's called the Conscious Agora, is that right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, other people, you know, who have presented, et cetera. But, you know, what I would say is that I like these experiments that are going on. I think that they're very good testing grounds for how society can move into something different and how we can kind of become more self-sovereign. But I do ultimately think that this is not necessarily the path for everyone. You know, I do think that this will always remain something on the kind of extreme end of things. And I support all of these projects. I think that, you know, they're great. But for most people, I think that it comes down to just some certain principles. So I actually, you know, just bringing it back to what you were saying before about the QR code stuff, like, you know, I don't have a problem with QR codes because I think that technology can be used, you know, in a positive way. I think the important thing is to have people make the distinction, you know, between, you know, using technology in a way that supports self-sovereignty, et cetera, and using technology in a way that kind of brings you into the digital gulag, right? So like, you know, Bitcoin, QR codes are used all the time. You know, you're constantly bringing up QR codes. That is, at the moment, the standard for how you kind of transact. And I don't think that people should be afraid of that. Now, when it comes to, you know, things like menus, I mean, you could even say, like, maybe that menu is stored locally on someone's server within the restaurant. Maybe they're running their own self-sovereign server where the menu is stored. You scan a QR code and you are speaking to their server directly. You're not going through any kind of intermediaries. That would be a good use of technology. So I've kind of deviated a little bit from the point you're making, but essentially what I'm saying here is like, these are great projects to see happening, you know, great little testing grounds. But I think for most people, it's just understanding, you know, basic distinctions between what is going to enslave you and what is going to bring you more self-sovereignty. So I don't think we're all going to end up moving to, you know, self-sovereign, you know, our own land kind of agora communities. I don't think that's the path for everyone. You know, you couldn't get everyone who's currently living in the cities and towns, et cetera, to go and live in these things. And it wouldn't even be the ideal anyway. You know, it would take a lot of land and it's unnecessary. I think the ultimate thing that we should be doing is just letting people know and keeping people aware of what they're doing in their own lives. Even if you're just living an ordinary life, you're living in a town, you're living in a city, you know, just be aware of how do you store your wealth? You know, do you store it in a self-sovereign way or not? You know, homeschooling your kids, that you don't need to live in a kind of self in a self-sustaining community or anything to do that. There's people who do that who are living in cities. There's people who do that who are living in towns. You know, there's lots of ways that you can have more self-sovereignty in your life without kind of going to that extreme end of things. So, you know, again, great to see these things happening and to see these experiments happening on that kind of extreme end of the scale. But I think for most people, the important thing is to constantly be trying to move into more self-sovereignty, however that looks, you know, just basic kind of smaller steps. And if all society does that, then we can start to gradually drift away from this kind of great reset idea that's being thrust upon us.
All right, perfect timing. We're going to jump to our break again. We're chatting with Johnny Hoddle live here in person from the Mexican Davos, Mexican World Economic Forum, the anti-Davos, the Greater Reset. And you can find his Staying Free podcast on the podcast ecosystem, or just check out his Linktree, linktr.ee/Johnny Hoddle. We'll be right back.
De-weaponizing weather
with reality and perspective.
You gotta love the way the weather balances things out. First half of January was very warm across the United States, very warm across much of Europe, very warm across the Far East. Now, these are the big three industrial areas of the world. Of course, I don't want to exclude India, but I'm talking about where you're looking at cold outbreaks making a big, big difference. So we have this map that's painted red in China, the United States, and Europe. Red being the color for warm. It flips around completely over the next couple of weeks. And major and severe cold is coming into all these areas. We are going to have the coldest 10-day ending of January since 2011 in much of Western Europe, which is interesting because the front 10 days of December were the coldest since 2010. In the United States, well, guess what? Winter vacation is just about over. This is TNT climate and weather watchdog, meteorologist Joe Bastardi, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative, this is Viewpoint.
Natural disasters may seriously threaten civilization in the future, yet the mainstream media peddles a pseudo-scientific man-made climate crisis. Natural climate change is a real threat, and historical records show that global cooling is the biggest killer, not global warming. Cooling may arise from astronomic phenomena, including solar cycles, and volcanic activity can play a major role too. For example, in 1815, Mount Tambora in Indonesia underwent the most deadly volcanic eruption in recorded history. Enormous amounts of dust and ash destroyed crops and vegetation, killed tens of thousands of people, and the eruption led to tsunamis. The following year, 1816, was known as the Year Without a Summer, as abundant frost and ice continued all year. Newspapers of the day reported extensive crop failures in Europe and the United States.
Our lines are now open. Call Hivori Morich now from the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Alrighty. Somebody's writing in the chat that QR codes are a slippery slope. We're back on our final segment with Johnny Hoddle here in person with me in narco territory at the Mexican World Economic Forum hosted by Derek Bros and John Bush and thegreaterreset.org. And check out Johnny's Staying Free podcast. Rick Moon of TNT has been a guest of his on Staying Free podcast, as well as a number of other notable folks like Derek Bros, DJ Lang, Matt Gubba, who spoke.
And of course yourself. Don't miss out the most important person.
Right, of course. Me. I think I was your first in-person interview.
Yeah, my first in-person, yeah.
We're trying to break new ground here on Staying Free podcast and TNT radio. Another important point I think I gather from today, James Guzman touched on it, Derek Bros talked about it, as well as Hannah Maria, who gave a powerful interview with me here on TNT yesterday, was, I think, family and laying down roots. And I've been thinking about this, you know, I don't know if Hannah mentioned it on air yesterday or it was privately to me, but when the lockdowns happened, she was in Peru and everything was locked down. People couldn't get back to the cities. The government shut everything down. You couldn't take buses. You couldn't do anything. And you're literally in the middle of nowhere, like in the forest somewhere or in some village, and you've got nowhere to go. And, you know, James has been here. He's in San Miguel. He's married a Mexican from San Miguel. We see Derek, his partner, girlfriend, I don't know what you call it, is Mexican from Morelia here. And now he's got her extended family. Same for me. And then I compare, where do I have my biggest network? I was in Croatia. I was exploring, you know, how big is my network there? It's tiny in Croatia because I've been away for so many years. It's a tiny population, Croatia. In the U.S. as well, it's tiny, but I could grow it quickly, but still it's the U.S. And my biggest network is here in Mexico. And so I think it's important to have leverage family, whether it's your family or your significant other's family, or whatever organizations you're part of. Like I have my church, other people have other organizations they're part of. And I think it's important because Derek was saying the same thing. I mean, you could be off in Zimbabwe or Thailand and something, everything comes crashing down again and you don't know anyone, you're just stuck, you're out on a limb. I don't think that's a good position to be in. And so I think at some point you gotta pick somewhere to be. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do kind of agree with Derek's point on this. You know, I think that there is some benefit to, you know, being kind of more free and more mobile and being able to move around. But I do think that the window seems to be kind of closing on that, at least on that being kind of a good idea, because, you know, I think that it's important to have community around you, especially, you know, because as we see a breakdown in kind of traditional institutions and the monetary system, et cetera, it's going to be more important than ever to have some kind of community around you. So, you know, obviously there is, I think there is some imperative of being in the right place, you know, in terms of that a country, you know, because countries are going to face this at different times. You know, I personally think that Mexico is very far behind, you know, and not just Mexico, this is the case for a lot of developing countries, very far behind other kind of developed economies in terms of having the infrastructure to actually bring about the Great Reset. So it's going to take more time. So you're kind of buying yourself time by moving, you know, in terms of a different geographical location. But I do think that kind of moving forward from that, there is going to become a point where the most important thing becomes having a community around you to kind of protect you from a potential breakdown in civil society. You know, we've seen this when especially kind of fiat money breaks down in the past. You know, things can get pretty crazy. You know, violence can become normal, you know, when you have dysfunctional government institutions, when, you know, you don't have kind of police forces operating. Obviously out here in Mexico, you know, if the government kind of collapses because, you know, under its own debt, I mean, who's going to take up that mantle? It's going to be the cartels, right? You know, the cartels are essentially going to run the country because they are the kind of next in line for that power structure. So I do think that Having roots somewhere, knowing where you are, you know, being able to communicate and speak the language at least to a reasonable degree, and having people around you that you trust is going to be more and more important. And obviously, you know, if you don't have, I think that, you know, things like food security are important in this respect. Now, you know, again, I don't think that it's going to be necessary that every single person is, you know, completely self-sustaining in terms of their food supply. You know, I still think that trade will exist, etc. But I think that, you know, if you don't have a food supply of some sort and you're not providing for yourself in that way, at least have some hard money that you can trade, or maybe have a skill, or maybe have something else that you're able to trade for someone else. You know, just having cash in the bank when you have a fiat collapse is not gonna do anything for you. You know, because as we've seen in the past, you know, you can have, when you have the collapse of currencies, people will put all their cash in wheelbarrows and take it to the shops, try and buy a loaf of bread. And by the time they've got there, that wheelbarrow of cash isn't worth enough to buy the loaf of bread. You know, this has happened in history. So I think that, you know, it's an important point. We need to, we need to be looking at our community around us and essentially having people that we can trust, and also having some system whereby you can kind of replace the government institutions that are going to be missing. You know, people are very accustomed to, you know, having the police there, having, medical facilities, whatever it is, you know, having all of these things provided for. And I think that, you know, with the world we're going into, finding some way of providing that either by yourself or through a local community is going to be really important. So I think it's definitely a good point that Derek was making on that.
Maybe to get your thoughts on crypto and Bitcoin, because you're a big Bitcoiner. I don't know how much we talked about it in the past, but I just learned about somebody that I knew. It's one thing when you hear these stories about people out there in the ether on the internet, but it's another one. It's somebody you know. So I learned this person lost the crypto crash, they lost everything, and it's just shocking. It's sad. And you know, my philosophy when it comes to that, I've mentioned often Rudyard Kipling's If poem, I think. Yeah, I know Rudyard Kipling. Every man is flawed. We were talking about MLK. I like some things that he did. And then with Patrick Casey yesterday, we were talking about criticizing him, how he paved the way possibly for BLM and CRT. Okay, every man is flawed. Rudyard Kipling apparently was, I don't know what, he was, you know, all for the empire and, you know, an imperialist, blah, blah, blah. But that poem is fantastic and it has timeless truths. And he said, if you bet all of your winnings on one game of pitch and toss and lose everything and start again from scratch without, you know, complaining under your breath, you'll be a man, right? And so I think, again, I guess the flip side for this person who lost everything because of the crypto crash is starting again, new beginning. But it's still sad, that experience, and Bitcoin as well. A number of people are talking about Bitcoin. Texas Slim yesterday talking about, you know, the Beef Initiative and others. A lot of people know my position. I think it's sort of pushing us toward the cashless society, but I've got no idea. I mean, now it's like 22,000 Bitcoin, but who knows? Maybe it'll go to 122,000. What's your take on Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, yeah, I'm a big advocate for Bitcoin. I think that ultimately we have to recognize, you know, we're moving into a world, into a digital world, and we can try to kind of go back to an analog world and try to use things like gold. And I don't discount gold as being useful for storing your wealth. But we have to remember, you know, gold has led us to the fiat paradigm in the first place. The reason that we have cash, which is being, you know, inflated at an infinite rate, and the reason that the cash in your pocket is worth far less than it used to be, is because people ultimately didn't use gold in the way that was, in a way that would sustain it as a useful currency, right? People used to trade around coins, gold and silver, but then as that became, you know, less and less useful, less and less convenient, people said, okay, well, I'll give my gold to a third party and then I'll take the cash. And everyone, you know, was quite happy keeping their gold in the banks. And then the banks just got rid of the gold altogether. Now, that all happened as a result of the disadvantages of gold. So this all happened because gold is very difficult to verify whether it's real gold. It could be tungsten. It could be something else, you know, that's disguised as gold. You have to be kind of an expert to verify it, or you have to, you know, trust a third party to verify it. It's very difficult to divide. It's very difficult to take into smaller pieces. It's very difficult to move around, especially in large quantities. So due to all of these drawbacks of gold, you know, Bitcoin kind of iterated on that and improved on it in a way which essentially gives you the monetary properties of gold, i.e. The nature of it being kind of a fixed supply, etc. But it was also able to be self-custodied essentially at zero cost. So you can actually take custody of it. You know, you can validate it, you know, by looking at the blockchain. It's an open distributed ledger and it can't be shut down. You can trade it anywhere in the world and it can't be censored. So it improved on a lot of those qualities of gold. So I think that cryptography as a technology should not be discounted. You know, this is something which has come around, and gold, you know, one final thing on gold is if people come around to your house with enough guns, they're going to be able to take your gold. You know, you are not going to be able to overpower an army, right? Whereas with something like Bitcoin, you know, cryptography does overpower an army, because cryptography, you cannot break mathematics. So I think that we reject that innovation at our peril is essentially what I would say. You know, I think that Bitcoin is a very, very useful tool and people should learn more about it. I think that people should not discount it purely because it's digital. I think that we should use it to our advantage.
All right, we are out of time. I hope everyone has a great weekend. I still got one more hour left. Monica Perez coming up. Great guest. Again, Johnny Hoddle of Staying Free Podcast, Linktree.com/JohnnyHoddle, JONNY Hoddle. Check out thegreaterreset.org. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.